The show is live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, I'll be talking with Scott Ferguson, who is conductor of the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir. They're performing tomorrow night in Danville as part of their spring tour, which will take them as far as Toronto. And also I'll be talking with Italian pianist Roberto Plano, who makes a return appearance this weekend with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night in Bloomington and Sunday afternoon in Springfield. I hope you'll stay with us. We just heard a wonderful piece by William Byrd called Sing Joyfully, as sung quite joyfully by the Collegiate Choir at Illinois Wesleyan University under the direction of J. Scott Ferguson. That was from a concert just last weekend in Peoria. They also sang last Friday in Springfield, and they're going to be singing tomorrow night in Danville at St. James United Methodist Church. This is all in preparation for their spring concert tour, which will take them through various places in the Midwest and also a bit in the East and once in Canada. Scott Ferguson is on the phone with me right now from his office in Bloomington. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So the tour is an annual thing or close to it?
Yes, it is. Every March during our spring break, we tour throughout the U.S., and then every fourth year, we take an international tour.
So when does the next international tour come?
Next year, actually. We were in Spain in 2008, and we will be in Germany, possibly the Czech Republic, and possibly Austria at a competition there, potentially.
And what will determine if you get to the competition?
Well, whether enough students, whether students will be available in July. We usually tour during May, but the Spital competition is a wonderful event in July. And if we are accepted, then we will see if we could work out the tour in July.
And what's the application process?
Well, they accept about 11 choirs. You apply about 70 or 80 choirs from around the world, and you send in your application, and you find out whether you'll be one of the 11.
That sounds like a pretty competitive process.
Yes,
with that many
indeed.
Choirs.
Indeed.
Have you done many competitions in the past?
No, the main issue has been that Wesleyan is a private institution and obviously is fairly expensive, and I have never tried. I've asked the students in the past whether or not they might be available for something like this in the summer, and the response has not been great. We considered the Cork competition, but that was over graduation weekend every year, so that hasn't worked. But this year we got a much better response about this, the prospect in general of doing that. So we'll play it by ear and see how it goes.
Well, and I think we talked about this last year at about this time before you were headed off on tour, but what's the philosophy behind touring in general? Why do it?
Oh, for a number of reasons. Recruiting, certainly. The current students are our best ambassadors for new students, and as they speak with current high school students and their friends, when the high school students find out that we tour nationally, internationally, and we have an active concert schedule, they want to go to a place that's active chorally, and that makes a big difference. I couldn't say whether we get X number of students from performing a performance at a certain certain location, but it's the fact that we are active, and the nature of the performance process is extremely important for the current students. The activity of repeated performance of music is quite profound, and the music we sing is the best sacred and secular music from the past five centuries, and there's always more you can learn about the music as you perform it. So our appreciation of the music deepens, our awareness of each other deepens, we become closer as an ensemble, and they have an awful lot of fun singing. So it's outreach and artistic growth and recruitment all rolled into one.
And also fun for the students.
Absolutely fun. That's right. They give up their spring break, but we have a great time on the bus together during the week, and we look forward to it all year.
Well, I would think it would be as good a way as any, or as most other things, to spend your spring break anyway.
Sure, and we go to a major city center and then back from it, and they have a free day. And, of course, this year it'll be in Toronto, the first time we've been to Canada. So they're all looking forward to that. I am as well, obviously.
And how do you find the places to perform, and particularly in a big city like Toronto?
You make a lot of phone calls. We were fortunate to get a wonderful place, St. Andrew's Church in downtown. And it's a little bit easier in this situation. We will not need housing. We usually stay in host homes, but on that free day, we stay in a hotel. And if you're trying to get a downtown concert site, it's very difficult for downtown churches often to provide housing. So we will stay in the hotel for those two nights and be able to perform at the church and then go over to the hotel. So without that burden of finding housing, it's a little bit easier for some churches to provide the concert space and a meal before the concert.
And you generally perform in churches?
Yes, yes. Our tour budget is fairly limited, obviously, and we need the good graces of the churches where we sing and to provide an evening meal and housing for the students. That one, it's usually just one night in a hotel, but in something like this, when we go to Toronto last year in New Orleans, we had the same experience. We had a wonderful Episcopal church where we sang, but they couldn't provide housing. So we have to depend on host homes in general and in the churches.
Who foots the bill? Does the students, or does it all come from the university?
No, we are fortunate to have a little money for the bus, essentially, and printing costs. The students pay their own lunches. But so far, we've been able to provide that one hotel night through the budget. And we do ask for free will offerings. We don't have a set fee, but between the free will offerings and the budget, we have usually broken even at the end of the year.
And it's a nice size, but not a huge choir, at about just under 50 voices.
Right.
So
little bit smaller this year, with six of our fine students are studying in Vienna. Studying in Vienna this semester. So we had a slightly larger choir in the fall, but they're doing very well this year.
And the performances you've just given and the one you're going to give tonight, I assume that these are essentially in preparation for this tour to make you a more polished ensemble.
The last weekend, we usually don't do two pre-tour concerts. This was a slight change this year, but we've enjoyed singing at St. Mary's Cathedral in Peoria. So we probably will do one pre-tour concert, and that really has helped us. We have that weekend concert and then two more rehearsals to refine the program some more, and it forces us to get ready a little bit earlier. So our first concert on the regular tour is not a dress rehearsal, but they're doing so well. These two pre-tour concerts were very well done, and I really enjoyed the chance to revisit the program and those two rehearsals following those concerts to do some further fine-tuning. And the tour itself begins this Friday in Danville.
And then the concert, you have a post-tour concert back at home.
Yes, our home concert Tuesday evening, March 22nd at 8 p.m. at Second Presbyterian Church here in Bloomington.
Let's hear another tune from the concert you gave in Peoria last weekend. This is one by somebody named Zdeněk Lukáš. Who is he?
He's a contemporary Czech composer, died recently. He's one of the most prolific Czech composers of the second half of the 20th century. Marvelously rhythmic, engaging work.
Called simply Alleluia. It's the Collegiate Choir at Illinois Wesleyan University, conducted by Scott Ferguson. This is from their concert last weekend in Peoria, and they'll be giving one tonight in Danville.
Tomorrow night,
7:30 at St. James United Methodist Church on North Vermilion Street. And this is Live and Local. That was called Alleluia by Zdeněk Lukáš and sung by the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, conducted by J. Scott Ferguson. Scott's on the phone with me right now here on Live and Local. I'm looking at a press release that announces the concert tomorrow night in Danville, in which a quote comes from, there's quotes from both Estonian and Czech conductors in which they both comment on the clear intonation in one case and the great intonation in the case of the other, which, of course, is an awfully important part of really good choral ensemble sound. What are some techniques that you use to get such good intonation?
Well, we use our ears as much as possible, obviously. Technically speaking, one of the most important elements is the uniformity of vowels. And the individual tone production. We work with physical alignment. If our bodies are set appropriately and we are thinking the correct vowel as an ensemble, those two issues will help us a great deal. Certainly harmonic thinking, being aware of whether it's harmonic tuning or melodic tuning, and the structure of the compositions, the various placements of the vowels in the range. So a lot of issues and text understanding, a lot of things go into the concept of a good intonation.
And you teach voice at Wesleyan in
Yes.
addition to the choral conducting and leading the choirs. How many of the students actually study with you?
I have a very small studio because it's only a third of my load, so depending on the semester, I may have three or four students. I'd love to have more, but with the number of other classes I teach, it's not possible. But I sure enjoy keeping my hand in that part of the pot, the choral vocal pot, as it were. It's always helped me. Whenever I've been teaching, I've been on the voice faculty as well, and I think it's extremely important to have that connection between the choral studio and the private studio. We have a wonderful relationship here between all of our voice teachers the choral side of things, and that's not always the case, so I've been very fortunate.
Well, I know that I don't know how common it is. I know here at the University of Illinois that the choral conductors are not on the voice faculty, and of course they sound very good as well.
Mm-hmm.
What's the size of the voice faculty there, and what's the size of the School of Music, actually?
Oh, boy, hard numbers. I should know this. We have about 60, 55 or so voice majors. We have 4 full-time people teaching voice and other courses, obviously, and some adjunct voice faculty as well. And it's probably close to 200, I would think, of music majors all told throughout in the School of Music. It's a very large School of Music for a liberal arts institution of this size.
And Wesleyan is about how big?
About 2,000 or so, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay, so not it is a pretty small school.
Right.
Didn't really know. And then to have at least of the size of the School of Music in the choir, that's pretty good too. Although I assume that not all of your singers are music majors.
No, we have a number of students from around the university. All ensembles are open to students of all majors, and we have people from all areas, political science and psychology, a lot of biology, pre-med, English, math, chemistry, English. They're all over everywhere. It's quite wonderful. I enjoy that part of it very much. Of course, as the voices deepen, the number of music majors tends to decrease. There are more soprano voice majors than there are bass voice majors, but we do very well with the men in terms of the numbers of voice majors as well, and we're grateful that several of the men from around other disciplines in the university enjoy singing at this level.
The three samples that you gave me, and we'll hear one more just in a couple of minutes, two of the three of them are sacred. And one, this Rhythmus, which we're going to hear by Hrushovsky in a little bit, I assume is not.
Yes.
How do you select the balance of sacred versus secular?
Well, I try to do a mix of each. I generally try to combine compositions in little groups. I almost always tend to begin with Renaissance motets, and my programs generally proceed chronologically, although I don't want to get stuck, but that seems to be the way it goes in general. And a good mix from all different styles. We do several of the Bach motets, Brahms motets, and some of the great classics of contemporary atonal literature and new composition, of course. Every year we have a commissioned work. And so I have my must-do pile or box, and just try to fit that together and see what pieces flow together. I don't generally pick programs according to themes of overall thematic structure, but within certain compositional styles, I'll try to have sets that work well together and get a sense of what would flow together and what would be appealing to audiences and stretch the choir and provide variety and contrast as well.
So it makes for a thorough education for the singers and for
Yes.
great entertainment for the audience.
In a number of different languages. We usually sing between four and six foreign languages in almost every program.
And we have, what's the language of this last one we're going to hear?
Actually, it's Latin.
It is Latin, and the Alleluia.
Right.
And it's, of course, English from William Byrd. So tell me about this last piece and the composer, Ivan Hrushovsky.
Ivan Hrushovsky was a wonderful Slovak composer. I got to know him fairly well, and I was working over there. The most prolific Slovak composer of the second half of the 20th century. He wrote a work for my choir in 2000 as our commissioned composer. And Ritmus is probably the most popular of his works that has been published here in the States. Not too many of his works are published. I'm working on addressing that issue, getting some works published through Alliance in Wisconsin. But this is a fast-paced piece that is often a required piece at competitions. It's enjoyed quite a few performances in recent years.
And Ritmus just means rhythm?
Yes, but the actual text is, it's kind of a joke. My wife's name is Eva, and the text is Ave Eva Fons Amoris. So it's Hail Eve, you fount of love, you source of love. Be greeted, Eve, you source of love. You are the queen of nobleness. So we have a good time talking about that with regard to my wife.
So do you get her to stand during performances and adore her?
I shouldn't let the cat out of the bag. We were just joking about pointing to her, looking in her direction at our home concert. But I don't think she'd like us to do that.
But you might do it anyway.
I might do it anyway, that's right.
Any idea if she's listening to this interview?
No, I don't know. I told her it would be happening, but I kind of doubt it. She's too busy. She works here as well at the school. She's a coordinator of the accompanying program. And this time of year, she's very busy. So.
Well, if you hear about it later, I guess you'll know if she did or not.
That's right. She would laugh.
Scott Ferguson is conductor of the Collegiate Choir at Illinois Wesleyan University. They're starting off their spring tour, in Danville tomorrow night at St. James United Methodist Church on North Vermilion Street. That starts at 7:30, free program, although a free will offering to be taken. And then they'll head off to parts near and far before they come back for a home concert on the 22nd of this month. It's a Tuesday at 8 o'clock, Second Presbyterian Church in Bloomington. And this is Ivan Hrushovsky's Ritmus, sung by the choir from their concert last weekend in Peoria. Thanks very much for joining us, Scott, and best of luck with the tour.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Ritmus, the name of the piece, by Ivan Hrushovsky, Slovak composer, sung by the Illinois Wesleyan University Collegiate Choir, conducted by Scott Ferguson. Go hear them tomorrow night at 7:30 at St. James United Methodist Church in Danville. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, where visitors of all ages can uncover and discover the wonderment of America's musical past through guided tours Monday through Friday at the University of Illinois. More information is at sousaarchives.org. And we have support from the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology Open House, Friday, March 11th and Saturday, March 12th on the U of I campus. More than 30 exhibits bring to life the research taking place at Beckman. Next up, we have a conversation with Italian pianist Roberto Plano, who was a finalist in the 2005 Cliburn International Piano Competition. He's playing twice with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra this weekend. We just heard a performance by pianist Roberto Plano of an A major sonata by Domenico Scarlatti. No, Alessandro is a different Scarlatti.
His father.
Father, yeah. And Roberto Plano is performing this weekend twice with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and then a 3 p.m. matinee on Sunday at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's going to be playing music by Johannes Brahms, the magnificent first piano concerto, his first of two. And Roberto Plano is on the phone with me now from Springfield, where he's had, one or two rehearsals. Thanks
one
for joining
rehearsal.
Me. One rehearsal so far?
Yeah.
And one or two left?
Yeah, one left, actually, and then the concerts.
Well, thanks very much for joining me on the phone here.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, what is the typical rehearsal schedule when you go in to work with an orchestra? Do you usually get just one or two rehearsals?
Well, it depends on the repertoire, and it depends also on the symphony schedule. So I may have in a few cases, I may have three rehearsals and then the concert. But usually when I have two concerts in a row, we do have two rehearsals. And the orchestra, of course, knows very well Brahms' first concerto because it's part of the big repertoire. And also, in my case, I played the Brahms already, and so I really know the piece very well. So I think, yeah, two rehearsals can be enough if the orchestra is as good as the Springfield Symphony.
When you go to work with an orchestra, do you typically get to choose the concerto you play, or do they typically ask you to play something specific?
Usually they see your repertoire, and I'm lucky enough to have a big repertoire, I think, with orchestras, because I have probably now 32 or 33 piano concertos in my repertoire. Usually they choose something between that list, but if they want something in particular, they can ask, and usually I'm very happy to learn it so that I can also improve my repertoire and learn something new. With the case of the Brahms, I think we decided with the conductor a few years ago, because I was here to play the Schumann concerto with the Springfield Symphony, and probably I told Karen, the conductor, that I really loved the Brahms, and so she told me, well, next time we'll do the Brahms. I think this was the case.
And that's Karen Lynn Deal, who's
yes.
music director.
Yes.
She's actually in her last season with the Illinois Symphony.
I know, yeah. Well, it's my third time with her.
Oh, really?
Yeah, before the Schumann, I played with her a Rachmaninoff third concerto in Reading, Pennsylvania a few years ago.
Reading, Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Oh, that's right near where my grandparents used to live.
Oh, nice. Yeah. She was guest conducting there, and I was the soloist.
Oh, that's fantastic. You've gotten your start probably from the number of competitions you've won or placed very high in,
yeah.
including being a finalist at the Van Cliburn competition in 2005, first prize winner in the Cleveland competition in 2001.
Yeah.
And you told me before we actually started recording here that that kind of got your North American career started, the Cleveland
yeah.
competition?
Yeah, that was my first time in the U.S. ever. And I had just started to do piano competitions the year before. I was in Japan and in Spain, where I got two fifth prizes in the finals. So I really was improving a lot in that period. And I decided to come to the United States to do an experience, a very nice experience, actually, because the competition was paying for the flights and for the lodging and for meals, everything, if you were selected to do it. So I was selecting, and to me, the fact that I was coming to the U.S. to perform and the fact that I was selected between the, I think, 52 pianists that were invited, it was already a big success. So after that, I really lived day by day, and I couldn't believe when I reached the finals, actually, and this is very strange. I think I really didn't want to win first prize because I was not sure that I was ready at that time to embark a concert career. And I remember I was speaking to myself and I was saying, well, maybe second prize is fine. People already start to know me and I have time to improve. But then I won first, and I think it was the right thing. I mean, I'm glad that it went in this way because I think I was ready and I improved on the way. And because it's very hard after you win a competition to continue the career. There are many competition winners that then disappear completely. And I don't know if it's their fault. It's very hard, actually. You have to be also lucky to know the right people after you win the competition. And I have a manager that helped me a lot. And you have to have people that support you. And you have to be able to live with the concert career, with the big repertoire that you have to have, and also with the fact that you have to play in any case. For instance, I have a bad cold in this week, and I'm coughing all the time, but I'm here to play because that's what I do. And so you learn to work through all these difficulties.
And of course, when you do play, you need to play well or people
of
won't
course.
Ask you back.
Yes, well, that's the main thing, yes.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask, how old were you when you won the Cleveland competition?
Sure, I was 23.
23, so that's fairly early.
Yeah, that's fairly early, yeah.
And I imagine that somebody at that age might feel ready or not,
well, yeah,
as you said.
Yeah, that's what happened, actually, because there are people that start very young to do competitions, but that was not my case. I started when I was 22. I did small competitions already when I was 15 in Italy, but when I was 22, I had my first international exposure. So it was crazy to me that only after a year of international experience I came up with a first prize. And so this was very, very nice to me. I was very lucky to have this possibility, and everything started from that point.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about competitions and several other things in a few minutes, but let's hear another of your performances, since you're going to be playing music by Brahms this weekend with the Illinois Symphony, a much bigger piece than we're about to hear, of course. And you've fairly recently recorded some music by Brahms, some of his intermezzi. Why don't we hear one of those?
Sure.
The Opus 18.
The 118, Opus 118?
Yeah. 118, sorry. Yeah. Number one. Why did you pick this particular set of intermezzi to record, since he's got quite a few?
When I decided to do the Brahms recording, I wanted to express the two different feelings that you can find in Brahms' music. And we know that Brahms started very young to compose, and then he continued until he was very old. And so I chose for this particular CD to record the Brahms Sonata Number 3, Opus 5, that he composed when he was 20, and where he wanted to, he had in his mind a very rich orchestral sound, but didn't have still the abilities to compose for orchestra. So that's why he probably decided to compose for the piano, because he was a pianist himself. So the sonata has a very, very symphonic sound, symphonic approach. And together with the sonata, I wanted to put something very different that he composed towards the end of his life. And this is that he called himself Lullabies of His Sorrow. And they don't have this symphonic attitude, but they're very intimate pieces, probably some of the most exquisite and genuine pieces that were ever written for piano. So that's why I decided I love really very much the Opus 118.
And here is the first of those in A major, an intermezzo by Brahms, performed by Roberto Plano from his studio recording here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
We heard two intermezzi by Johannes Brahms. I announced that we'd hear one, but I snuck in the second one of his Opus 118 set, the first one in A major, and the second one in what key, Roberto Plano?
Still in A major.
Also in A major.
Yeah.
And while we were listening to that, Roberto suggested we might hear the second, since it's a little more on the intimate side that he was just describing for us. He's going to be playing this weekend some Brahms, the first piano concerto with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. It's a huge piece of music and will constitute the entire first half of their concerts on Friday at 8 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, and Sunday at 3 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. Karen Lynn Deal is the conductor, and the rest of the program includes the Tannhäuser Overture of Richard Wagner, and then a wonderful symphony by Samuel Barber called, simply called his first symphony. He wrote a second, but he wasn't overly fond of it for some reason or another. And Roberto Plano, of course, on the phone with us right now. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about these competitions. I mentioned you'd been a finalist at the Van Cliburn in 2005, also won a competition or one of the winners in Calgary, Canada, and Dublin also, and some in Italy. Is it possible to say that any of those competitions have been more important than others in advancing your career?
Well, yeah, especially the North American competitions, the Cleveland, the Cliburn, and the Honens were very important to me. I think I'm one of the pianists that won most of these prizes in North America, considering the three competitions. But it's not a statistic thing, but they really helped me to have concerts after the competition. The purpose of these competitions is to recognize pianists with talent and to give them the possibility to express themselves. But of course, a piano competition is very peculiar. It's not really like the Olympics or like a race that you can really judge without any doubt. Music is art, and the performance of a piano is of course one of the most high kinds of expressing yourself, and of course this is very personal, so the judgment that you can have may vary many times, and if you have maybe a completely different jury the day after, they could have a completely different opinion on you, and maybe they could advance someone else. So I'm saying this to say that competitions are, of course, very, very important to let you start a career, but also that you have to know that the life after competitions, that's where you really do to continue your career.
As part of some of your performances, you often will give master classes.
Mm-hmm.
How commonly do you do that, and what do you get out of giving master classes for other people?
Well, I really love to teach. I had great examples from my teachers. I had many different teachers, including some of the greatest, and I really had an incredibly nice relationship with them. There was not really teacher versus student, but there was, especially when I was a little older, musicians that could work together and find a way to do something very nice. And I found that I really liked to transfer what I learned and to transfer my experiences as concert pianist to my students, and that's why I really wanted to teach as much as I could, because I really love it, and I'm sure and I know that I learn a lot from my students. So that's why also, in addition to the master classes and to the State Conservatory in Italy where I teach, I founded with my wife a piano academy 3 years ago. And right now we have, the academy has probably now 70, 80 piano students, but I do have a group of 15 advanced students that come once a month to stay with me for a couple of days and to work on the repertoire. It's like a advanced masterclass, and it's something they really love to do.
Compared with, well, you've had masterclasses with some distinguished artists yourself, as you mentioned, both the private study but also public masterclasses, Philippe Entremont, Aldo Ciccolini, and many others.
Yeah.
When you give masterclasses, do you find yourself modeling your approach on their work with you, or not necessarily?
Well, if it's only a masterclass, like a one-day masterclass, you cannot really do too much because there's not enough time. Usually if you do a one-day masterclass, it's only maybe 45 minutes for each pianist. So you know that you cannot really embark on a very long work, but you try to give ideas to the pianist. Usually what I do is to listen to them. They can play the whole piece that they prepared, and then I speak with them for like 5 minutes, wanted to know from them if they thought that they did a good performance, and pointing out the things that I really didn't like or that didn't convince me, and then at the end I give a few advices. And we try to work on little details. That's for the day masterclass. But that's very different if I see them a few times during the year. So in this case, you can really build something very important throughout the whole year and start a process that at the end eventually will lead to an improvement. That's what I hope each time that will happen to my students. And it's amazing to see in very many cases the results that they can get after a few lessons.
And especially if they're especially perceptive.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But in the case of my piano academy, I do an admission test. So the ones that I accept to study with me, I already know that they're very receptive. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Let's hear some more music, another performance of yours. This is going to be of the Rondo from Beethoven's Pastoral Sonata, his Opus 28. Do you recall working on this with a particular teacher and what you might have been told about it?
Well, I really don't remember what I've been told, but I remember this was a piece, the Pastoral Sonata, that I learned when I was very young. I probably was 16 or 17 at the Milan Conservatory with the teacher that I studied with at the Milan Conservatory. And then after a few years, after the finals at the Cliburn competition, I decided to play it back because I was doing a first half of Beethoven sonatas with the Pastoral and the Appassionata. So in this case, two very different approaches to the sonata model by Beethoven. And I remember that this last time I worked by myself because I was older than before on the sonata and found myself new things to work on.
And so let's hear the Rondo from the Opus 28, the Pastoral of Beethoven. It's from a live concert performance by Roberto Plano, who's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. He'll be playing with the Illinois Symphony twice this weekend in Bloomington and Springfield.
Thank you.
That was pianist Roberto Plano in the Rondo from Beethoven's Pastoral Sonata, his Opus 28 in D major, heard here on Live and Local. He's going to be playing the first concerto of Brahms with the Illinois Symphony in Bloomington Saturday night, and Friday night, and in Springfield Sunday afternoon. And he's with us on the phone from Springfield right now. Can you say that your repertory focuses on any particular era of music? I mean, so far we've covered Baroque, late Romantic, or rather late classical, I guess, with Beethoven, and then the Romantic with Brahms, and we'll hear a little bit more from that era couple minutes.
I try to have a complete repertoire, so I start with Bach, Scarlatti, and even before something. I arrived to the contemporary music. For instance, when I had my debut at Lincoln Center in New York at Ellis Dalley Hall, I played for the first time in America a piece by Luis de Pablo called Retratos y Transcripciones, and de Pablo is one of the most famous contemporary composers nowadays. So I really try to have a complete repertoire, but I cannot deny that my interest is mostly in classical, late classical with Beethoven, going to late Romanticism with Brahms, going through Liszt, of course, and some Chopin, and arriving also to the late Russian music like Scriabin. This is the repertoire where I find myself more at ease, and also with many interests to the South American music, for instance, Ginastera and Villa-Lobos, also some music that is kind of bridge between classical and other types of music, like the Piazzolla. So these are the things that I prefer to play.
And what pieces are you learning right now?
Well, right now, this is the year of Liszt, so I'm playing lots of music by Liszt. I just learned 2 months ago a great piece that I really didn't know well, which is the Reminiscences of Norma, the opera by Bellini. And it's a great piece. I just played it live at WFMT in Chicago 2 days ago, and I really love to play it. And I'm putting this piece together with other pieces, mostly from the Years of Pilgrimage by Liszt. And also I'm playing an interesting piece, which is the Second Symphony by Beethoven, transcribed by him.
Oh, yes. I'm going to be conducting that in a couple of
really?
In a few weeks myself. Yeah.
Wow.
That's the symphony of Beethoven. Every time I hear it, I always have to think, now who's that by?
Yeah. Yeah, because people don't know it, actually.
And it's fantastic. It's
a fantastic
piece. Yeah.
Fantastic piece. And the reduction, it's not a reduction, but the version for piano is unbelievable. And, sorry. And it's the real symphony. There's not anything wrong or anything added to the music. It's the real thing.
And he does a splendid job.
The only thing is that is on the piano, so you have to be able to create this rich and symphonic sound. And I'm a conductor myself, not a real one, but I do it sometimes. So I love to play the symphonic music on the piano.
I'm sure you do just fine. And it's great to talk to you and great to hear you play on these recordings. And we'll let our listeners hear one more. Roberto Plano is with the Illinois Symphony this weekend. Friday night at 8 o'clock at Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, in Bloomington, of course. And then Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. For more information, you can go to ilsymphony.org. And that they can direct you for how to get tickets. He's playing the first piano concerto of Brahms on a program that also includes an overture of Wagner and Barber's First Symphony. Thanks for joining us as you have a cold. I hope you get over that quickly.
Thank you.
And best of luck with the performances.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
We're going to go out with a favorite piece of mine in a public performance by Roberto Plano. It's the Arabesque of Robert Schumann. Thank you. Roberto Plano playing the arabesque of Robert Schumann here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium at 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. Here are some other events you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area. At the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, tonight at 7:30 is the Akademie für Ancient Music of Berlin, playing Baroque music. That's at 7:30. At the Krannert Center also, it's Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's a bacchanal put on by the U of I Department of Theater. That starts at 7:30 and runs through the weekend. The U of I Jazz Lab Band, the Jazz Lab Band at the Eastern Illinois University plays at Dvorak Concert Hall in Charleston tonight at 7:30. The Young Dubliners are at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts in Bloomington tonight at 7:30. Pagliacci play jazz at the Iron Post tonight in Urbana. That's at 9:30. They're preceded at 7 by the Dave Brinkman Group, also playing jazz. Solid Gold Cadillac is a show put on by the Community Players Theater in Bloomington. That is at 7:30 through Saturday. And it's Betrayal, put on by the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana tonight through Sunday at 8 o'clock. Four Places, name of a show. It's the Springfield Center, the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. That's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. There's a faculty voice recital by Karen Ferguson at Millikan University in Decatur at Kuiper Hall tomorrow night at 7:30. Mamma Mia is at the Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Today's programs are made possible. I'm sorry, I said that already. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLFM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. Tomorrow, it's the wonderful group The Steel Wheels on our show live for the hour.